This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now, here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is attorney Ronald Goldfarb. Now, Mr. Goldfarb graduated from the Yale Law School and then served 3 years in the United States Air Force. In 1964, Mr. Goldfarb practiced law as a special prosecutor for the Organized Crime and Racketeering Section of the Department of Justice. He also served as a member of the President's Task Force for the War Against Poverty. And later in 1964, was a special writer on Robert F. Kennedy's staff for the New York senatorial campaign. In November, Mr. Goldfarb's new book, Ransom, a critique of the American bail system, was published by Harper & Row. In Ransom, he speaks out against the profound social injustice of the American bail system. If you'd like to comment on the present American bail system, or share with us any experiences that you've had with the workings of the bail system, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are on duty, our lines are open on Night Call, and we invite you to join us here. Area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may reverse the charges. Mr. Goldfarb, what is bail?
Russ, the bail is the system that our law uses to govern what happens to a person from the time he officially comes in contact with the law, that is, from the time he is perhaps arrested in a criminal case or indicted or arraigned, until the time, months later, when he is tried. It's a system which, as many of our legal institutions, we have adopted from the English. Many centuries ago, if I can give you a bit of history, the judges in England traveled throughout the realm, often didn't get to a place for many months. The prisons were deplorable, and they were also very insecure. And so the sheriffs, who had the responsibility of seeing that a defendant was around when the judge finally came to town, was happy to pass on this responsibility to an employer or a friend or a family of the person charged with a crime. And if they would vouch for the fact that he would be present and appear at the time the judge came for trial, he was happy to allow them to take over control of that defendant. There's only one purpose of bail, and that is to assure the appearance of a defendant at his trial.
What does bail actually mean, B-A-I-L?
Bail is where someone or something is in the control of another person.
I see.
And, under our bail system, in effect, a defendant is under the control of either the court or someone who will vouch for him until the time that he shows up for trial. Now, our system has, although adopted from the English, has been made one significant change, and that is that we have changed from the personal vouching of one person for another to a money element. That is, the bail bondsman will now vouch that a person will be present for trial, and he'll stake a sum of money that the person will be there.
It sounds like gambling.
Well, it is. In a way, it's something like insurance. Instead of really assuring the presence of a person, as was the rule originally, he now promises that he'll pay a stipulated amount if the person isn't there, the idea being that this money inducement will bring the bondsman to assure that person's presence at trial.
Actually, the bondsman, then, has to keep his eye on the fellow that gets the bail, is that it?
Yes, the bondsman really has the singular role in these first steps of trial.
Well, now, in your book, you criticize the American bail system.
Yes, you got the point.
I can't help it, right on the front cover there. A critique of the American bail system.
Yes, I feel, Russ, that the system as it operates in America is scandalous. I could break down for you into some categories about the four reasons that strike like me as reasons why our system is insufferable and ought to be changed. For example, any system which bases a man's freedom before he's convicted of any crime upon money inherently will discriminate against a large amount of people who simply don't have that money to buy their freedom. And so we find that many people suffer periods of time in jail for the crime of poverty. And as one justice on our Supreme Court said, a system of law which bases the kind of justice a man gets upon how much money he has is not good. So our bail system, in effect, does that. Secondly, it has been proven through the years that the bail system has lent itself to excessive and what I feel are inexcusable abuses. That is, it's such a discretionary kind of open-end power that judges have been allowed to use it for ulterior purposes. As I stated in the beginning, the purpose of bail is to assure a man's presence for trial. And yet, time and again, judges will use it to punish unpopular defendants, or to teach a lesson, or to give someone a taste of jail, to break crime waves. Oftentimes for right purposes, but really powers beyond which they ought to be using it.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Ronald Goldfarb. He's an attorney, an author, and we're talking about reforming the American bail system. If you'd like to join us here at Night Call, our number is area code 313-846-6601. Ron, you mentioned that money is the key word here in the American bail system. Was it always so?
No. Originally, as I stated, the idea was to have somebody just assume the responsibility of assuring a man's presence. But that has changed with the addition of the money element so that the spreading out of responsibility to people who would ordinarily be likely to assure someone's presence, such as his clergy or his employer or his family, somebody like that, has been relegated to the bondsman. And the bondsman really is has become a partner of sorts of the judges and the police with regard to pretrial procedures. I feel that this partnership is somewhat of an unholy alliance, and one which our experience has shown has worked to frequently compromise the administration of justice.
Well, now, what happens to a fella that can't afford a bondsman? What do bondsmen cost? I mean, how does this work?
Well, a bond is usually 5 to 10% of the bail itself. For example, if the judge sets bail in a case at $1,000, a bondsman will go bond, it's said, for a man if he will pay a premium of let us say, $50 or $100. Then the bondsman will require that man put up collateral to the extent of the full $1,000. In case he should skip, the bondsman would be responsible to the court for the full $1,000.
All right, he makes his profit this way. But what happens to the guy that can't afford?
The guy who can't afford it, in a word, simply goes to jail. And this is not a very small amount of people we're talking about.
How many?
It's been estimated, Russ, that over 1.5 million people go to jail each year in America because they don't have the money to afford a bail bond.
1.5 million Americans.
Yes, and 10 to 12 million people buy bonds, it's been estimated. So we're talking about $250 million business. And we're talking about an inherent discrimination against a vast part of the people in this country.
Is this why we read of the racketeers running around before a trial, or people that are famous leaving the courtroom immediately because they can afford bonds?
This is the other side of the coin, Russ. On the one hand, the requirement of money bail will discriminate against people who don't have it or can't afford it or aren't known in town and therefore a bad risk, so to speak, and keep them in jail when really there's no risk of their not appearing for trial and they should be free. The other side of that coin is that there are an awful lot of people who present specific dangers to society aside from whether or not they'll appear for trial. Those people ordinarily can afford bail, and so I feel that the bail system fails with regard to them as well, because on the one hand it's keeping in good risk people in jail for no reason other than the fact that they're poor. On the other hand, it isn't taking into consideration that society may have grounds to protect itself against people who would endanger it pathological criminals, organized crime, and racketeers, they can afford a bail bond very simply and be on the streets. Being able to afford the money for a bail bond is irrelevant, both to the poor man, who may not be any risk at all, and to the racketeer, who, if he's going to present a danger to society, well, we don't want him free, even if he can afford it.
Ron, every once in a while, I'll read in the paper, though, where a judge will say, will not allow a bond to be set for an individual. Can they do this?
Well, legally, most states and the federal government the laws say that in capital cases, a judge may set bail, and in all other cases, he shall set bail. That means it's discretionary in capital cases, and it isn't in other cases.
Now you're talking like a lawyer again. Capital means death?
Right. Where it's a murder or a very serious crime where there's a death penalty, then the judge has the discretion not to. But in other cases, he's supposed to set bail. What judges will do then to get around this, Russ, is set bail extraordinarily high, knowing full well that the man isn't going to be able to afford it, and thus accomplishing the purpose of keeping him confined if he presents some kind of a danger. But really, this is a kind of manipulation, and sympathize as you may with the problem the judge has, he's really abusing his powers if he sets an excessive bail. Constitution says bail should not be excessive. And so if a judge sets it at $100,000, meaning to keep the man in jail, although it's hard to prove and hard legally to do anything about it, he's really setting excessive bail. Then there's another interesting question, and that is, what if a man is just very poor? Perhaps a $100 bail is excessive to him.
Well, how does the judge know this?
What does excessive mean?
Yeah, that's a relative term.
Excessive, but we're living in a society where we know from recent studies of poverty in this country that a quarter of our population fall below the poverty line. And so the idea of excessiveness really, I think, should be reconsidered in light of that.
Are these the people then that are usually involved in crime too? I mean, that segment of the economy?
Well, I think that they have the great problems. You find that crime rates are high in poor areas, but again, when we're talking about bail, we're talking about a point in time when the man has not been tried yet. And we presume, our whole philosophy and our system of law is that we presume that a man isn't guilty until he is convicted. And yet, we are punishing these poor people before they're convicted.
We put them in jail.
By putting them in jail. And what is more shocking, if that isn't bad enough, is that recent studies have shown that people who have compared the fates of people who were in jail before trial with those who were free on bail before trial, and found out that those in jail before trial are convicted more, plead guilty more, sentenced to jail more, so that one's status before trial seems to follow him throughout the trial process. And I can add that this isn't only a problem of the poor, hapless guy who happens to end up in jail. The cost of running this bail system to you and I and to the taxpayers in all the towns that are listening in tonight are staggeringly high. One judge, for example, in New York City pointed out recently that I believe it was in 1962, 58,000 defendants were in jail before they were tried because they couldn't afford bail.
In New York City?
They spent, in one city alone, they spent 1,700,000 days there, and it cost the city over $10 million to pay for these facilities. And this is so in, perhaps not to this degree, but in all the major cities of the country, we, the taxpayers, are paying to house these people, to feed them, to maintain them. We're using up our police, who might be better used elsewhere as to serve custodial functions here. So we're all paying a tremendous price for it.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Ronald Goldfarb. He's an attorney and author of a new book on the bail system in America called Ransom, and we're talking about reforming the American bail system. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name is just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb. Hello again, Night People, and we're looking tonight at Ransom, a new book on the American bail system by Mr. Ronald Goldfarb. And Ron is in Washington and on Night Call tonight. He's also an attorney as well as a author. So if you'd like to comment about the American bail system or ask a question of Mr. Goldfarb, give us a call here at Night Call. Now remember, you may call us direct. You may dial area code 313-846-6601 and reverse the charges if you wish. Now that's area code 313-846-6601. If you get a busy signal on the Night Call lines, just hang up and dial us again. Our operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here tonight, and let's hear what you've been thinking about in regards to the American bail system. Should we keep the present system, or should we try for a new system? Well, let's hear what you're thinking about. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Goldfarb, I have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana. The gentleman is listening on WFBM, Mr. Rick Shepherd. Good evening, Rick. Welcome to Night Call. Your comment, please.
Thank you. I just have a question. Mr. Goldfarb's book deals with the social injustice of the system, the bail system. I was wondering if this would include the time bail required in out-of-state, say, JP courts for minor violations like traffic, speeding, little things like this. I know in crossing the country several times that, especially in some of the western states, this is the case where you're required to post quite high bail when they know that you are not going to return or will not return for such a minor offense.
Rick, have you had that experience? Okay. Ron, what do you think about that?
Well, I agree with Mr. Shepherd. This is probably one of the prime examples of what you might call a ransom. A lot of people would go farther and perhaps call it a shakedown. I think that it isn't only a bail problem. This is the whole problem of the justice of the peace and how it operates for out-of-staters. But I do think that it's wrong. I think that probably one of the answers would be to have a quicker trial, although I question what kind of trial it would be. I don't know the answer to it. I just feel that taking money from a person in this kind of a way is really wrong, and it's been terribly abused, and it's one of the kinds of problems that seem to strike home to a lot of people, because I know from other programs I've been on, a lot of people have had the same kind of experience as Mr. Shepherd, and it's one way possibly to bring home the kind of injustice on a larger scale that I talk about in my book, because it is a problem that isn't confined to the bad guys and the criminals someplace, but it's a system that hits us all and hits us in an unfortunate way.
Ron, let me ask you a question. Is it possible on a speeding violation, if you can't meet the bail, that you'd have to stay in jail for a month, did you say, before a trial?
Well, I don't know that it necessarily be a month, but I can give you a perfect example of the kind of thing Mr. Shepherd was talking about and the kind of thing that could happen to any of us. This was an example that was mentioned to me, as a matter of fact, by And he told me the story about how he was at one point pulled in for reckless driving because a particular traffic light that he had gone through it was broken at the time. And he and another man were arrested. This was a Friday, and they were brought before the local justice of the peace, something like Mr. Shepard's example, and they were charged with reckless driving, and bail was set at $200. Well, he paid a bondsman who appeared on the scene immediately, $20, I guess it was, and was told to show up in court the following Tuesday. Well, in the interim, he found out about the light being broken, and so when he went into court on Tuesday, he explained it to the judge, and the judge apologized for inconveniencing him and dismissed the charges. So as he was leaving, he said, you know, it kind of annoys me that they used up some of my time on Friday, and they dragged me into a police station, they made me take a half a day off on Tuesday, and it cost me $20 to boot. At which point the other man said to him, you're complaining, I've been in jail since Friday night. And it turned out that this man had just moved to town, and he didn't have any friends or employer yet. His family was to join him, he had just shifted jobs. And so nobody would go bail for him because no one had any way of checking up on him. Well, this man stayed in jail from Friday night till Tuesday simply because of the silly requirements of bail in this case, a perfectly reputable person. And pretrial detention facilities are worse than some of the state penitentiaries. So it's a very horrible kind of experience for somebody to go through. And often the paying of money is not the worst.
Rick, do you have any suggestions on how we might reform the bail system?
Reform it? No, but I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The time that I have in mind particularly happened in the state of Mexico.
I'm having trouble hearing, Russ.
Yeah, I'll try paraphrasing for you. It happened in the state of New Mexico?
Right. And though the bail was not exorbitant by any means, it was rather high. And when we were taken into court, there were several others who had been caught in the same radar setup as we had been caught in. And we were all told that unless we would like to spend, this was on a Friday evening too, about 1 o'clock in the morning, that unless we all wanted to spend the night in a jail with approximately 300 drunks, we were told, that we could pay our bonds and leave. And so, in other words, it was almost blackmail to get us, you know, out of the area. And we were right on the state line. And this, to me, is an injustice all around, admittedly. And as Mr. Goldfarb has said, it is widely known. So why hasn't something been done about it? Who can do something about it? Is it under any type of federal control? Is it all local? Is it state? Or where does control lie?
Ron?
Well, there has been the beginning of reform of the bail system, some aspects of the bail system around the country. A large number of cities are experimenting with different reform programs. The state of Illinois is. Federal courts in Detroit are doing a good job in this respect. In New York City, there's a reform program going on. Tulsa, Oklahoma, there's a program going on. They're essentially experimenting with ways to avoid the requirement of money and to find better ways to assure that a person will at the same time show up for trial. So there is a beginning. There's still a long way to go. Federal government has been holding hearings for the last 2 years at the United States Senate before the Judiciary Committee and some of its subcommittees for a new system which would reform all of the federal courts. Bail procedures. The essence of what most of these experimental programs are doing is taking the requirement of money out of the bail system, taking the bondsman out of the partnership with the courts, and placing upon the courts the obligation to determine at this pretrial stage whether or not a man has ties to the community, whether or not it's likely he's going to flee, and whether or not with some supervision by the courts it would be a wise thing to release him on his own trust. Well, these programs so far have worked tremendously well. In one trial period in New York, for example, the people who were on bail jumped three times as many times or failed to show three times as much as people who were released on their own trust.
In other words, people are trustworthy then.
Right. And if they're not trustworthy, morally, practically speaking, we seem to have reached a point where it's just terribly difficult for somebody to flee. The average man has too many ties to the community. He has a family. He ordinarily has a house. He has a job. He has debts. Where is he going to go? He can't afford to stay away forever anyway. He can't emotionally leave his community. And in those few cases where people are fugitives, the FBI is pretty good at getting them back. So it's a fact of life that there really isn't too much risk of flight. And so if the only purpose of bail is to assure a man's appearance, some kind of investigation before, at the time of his arraignment, can disclose this, and then we can successfully deal with this on a much more responsible basis.
Rick, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and sharing your questions with us.
Thank you.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Mr. Rick Shepard, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBM, a gentleman who had an experience that I guess many of us have had, getting a ticket from a justice in a small town and then going to a justice of the peace. In some states, they're doing away with justices, aren't they?
With JPs.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of reconsideration now of the role of the justice of the peace and the abuses. I think that probably remains there a good book for somebody to write.
Well, maybe that's the next one. Of course, I think you're going to have to do a lot of explaining yet on ransom, because I think you have quite a job ahead of you. If you, in the beginning of the book, you talk about why you wrote the book. And obviously you felt concerned that the American bail system is really in violation of the American Constitution, isn't it?
Yeah, the American Constitution and a lot of the principles that I think we all share that isn't necessarily specifically stated in the Constitution.
We're talking tonight with Mr. Ronald Goldfarb. He's an attorney and author, and he has written a new book called Ransom, A Critique of the American Bail System.
And it's a very, very interesting book, and a book that, well, makes you think and wonder a little bit about the American legal system, and particularly this problem of bail. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. Ronald Goldfarb. He's an attorney and author, and we're talking about reforming the American bail system. Now, if you'd like to join us here in Night Call and express your opinion about the present bail system that we have going for us in this country, or if you'd like to tell us about some experiences that you've had with this system, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges if you wish. Now, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open now, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Goldfarb, let's go out to Topeka, Kansas. A gentleman who's listening on WIBW out in Topeka, Mr. George Randall. Good evening, George, and welcome to Night Call. Your comment, please, sir.
Well, howdy,
Yes, sir.
I've wondered about this thing.
George, can you speak up a little bit?
They have set up in all organizations certain, like credit organizations and so forth, areas of credit. Now, there are certain... This is a boy in Alabama that got taken back there illegally and brought back to Pennsylvania. It develops now on the late night that he was also